Good morning. I'd like to call the work session of the Travis Central Appraisal District Board of Directors to order. The time is 11:33 on Tuesday, May 25th, 2021. We are conducting this meeting via Zoom meeting service and a quorum is present. The first item on our agenda is the workshop on the district budget, preparation and possible direction to staff on budget priorities. The board will not make any final decisions regarding the district budget at this meeting.
We've got, we've given you a wish list budget of everything that we think we could possibly need, given the workload that the appraisal district has and the volume and some of the additional requirements that we are going to have as a result of this legislative session. We know that it's a big ask and it may not be something that we can do completely, but I do think that it's the direction that we need to move towards. Most of the increase in the budget is just adding staffing. We haven't really increased our staffing levels in the last 10 years. We have done everything that we can to try to mitigate that by enhancing our technology, but we are getting to a point now where it really is going to require an increase in staffing levels in order to keep up with the workload. So this is not, again, this is our wish list request. Of if we could get everything that we thought we needed, this is what we would ask for. But we realize that there are budgetary constraints and considerations that we'll need to take into consideration and may have to come down off of this overall request. But again, staffing levels and increasing our staffing is one of our key identified priorities in our upcoming budget. And with that, let me share our screen for our budget workshop presentation. Can you guys see this, the workshop screen?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So I will, Leanna did a lot of the preparation for the budget and I will let her go through the workshop session and then I will pipe in as she's giving the presentation as well. So we'll start out. Go ahead, Leanna.
Thanks, Maria. So as Maria said, we're looking at a 23.74% increase, which is a little over, a little under $4.8 million increase from 2021. And just a reminder, 2021, we did do a zero change budget to assist the taxing entities. We knew it was gonna be a tough year, and it was, but we've held our budget last year. And the majority of the increase for the 2022 proposed budget is adding staff. So we're proposing adding 28 additional staff to the budget. And just a little bit of some statistics behind the analysis that I looked at when we were seeing, you know, where are we at in comparison to other CADs? We do have the third highest market value in the state, and that was the Comptroller's operations study in 2019. So we have 7.2% of the entire state market value. And a comparison that a lot of CADs use is the budget to the percent of total levy. And so right now, our budget as a percent of levy is at 0.43%. And we are second lowest out of the major metro CADs, only behind Dallas CAD. So this that budget to levy is a good show of efficiency and how we run our organization and cost-wise. So 10-year history, we've added 62,400 parcels since 2011 and over $158 billion in value. So our role has increased 128, almost 129% in the past 10 years. We've also had a significant increase in the functions that we have to do because of those increased parcels and the increased value. I show here a 10-year change on some of those mission critical tasks that we have to do. So for field inspections, we've had almost 186% increase in the last 10 years on the number of field checks that we have to do that our appraisers have to go put boots on the ground and look at a property. You can see new construction is up almost 150% in the past 10 years. Permits, 65%. The number of exemptions that we have to process each year has increased over 50%. So we just have a substantially larger workload than we did 10 years ago. We've also seen, as y'all are familiar, an increase in the number of protests. We've seen an 80% increase in the last 10 years in protests, with 2019 hitting our record at 143,000. We have seen almost 550% increase in the number of lawsuits filed. In 2011, we only had 240 lawsuits filed after our protest season. And in 2020, we had over 1550. The astonishing part of this is the amount of value that's under lawsuit. We've gone from $5.9 billion to over $50.5 billion under lawsuit in 2020. So our work, where it used to stop at the protest, we've now continued this season, and we have a lot more work after the protest season that has to get done, including arbitrations and lawsuits. And arbitrations is also up 260% since 2011.
And I will say this, you know, in terms of our values being so high and the fact that we've got some of the highest values in the state, it leads to our having some of the highest percentage of protests in the state. So most other appraisal districts, they will see anywhere between 15 and 20% of their total parcels protested in a given year. We're running greater than 30% of our parcels being protested on an annual basis. And so we're seeing increased protest volume, and that increased protest volume then leads to increased litigation and increased arbitration. And when we have litigation, and Leanna was talking about that season extending beyond the protest, we're required to do settlement conferences for litigation. And that's what happens after the protests are resolved. We then have to do settlement conferences. So our staff that used to traditionally only have to spend a little bit of time doing settlement conferences now has to spend a greater portion of their time doing settlement conferences for litigation, which means we have less time to dedicate to doing the discovery and the valuation processes that we need to do to get prepared for the following year. So our increased workload is really driving our request for additional staffing.
And we've been able to take on this increased workload the last 10 years. We haven't had a change from our 2011 budgeted personnel to our 2021 budgeted personnel. And we've done this by really focusing on making technology enhancements and other aspects to improve efficiency beyond just people doing the work. But we've hit a point now where we've gone as far as we can technology-wise. We need more bodies to be able to do the workload that we have. I called it critical mass in the document that I sent y'all because we've really hit that point. There's no more efficiencies we can gain through technology. We need people. So here's a breakdown of what we're proposing staffing-wise. It is a 22% increase in the number of positions over the 2021 budget. The 28 FTEs would give us 19 more appraisal positions, 3 support positions to help with the data entry and the clerical functions for the appraisers, 4 customer service representatives, 1 IT programmer, and 1 legal assistant or paralegal to help with the astronomical number of lawsuits.
Leanna, may I ask you a question?
Of course.
Do we have any comparable data from the other CADs on the positions that they have, particularly those CADs that are comparable to us?
Yeah, we do staffing surveys each year around this time, budget-wise. Every CAD is set up a little differently, so it's hard to marry up positions one-to-one, but almost all of the major metro CADs have more staff than we do. Our staff... One of the things I looked at is for appraisers, how many parcels per appraiser? And we were higher than the majority of the other metro CADs.
Yeah, well, a question I can see aimed at you all when this budget goes public is that question, you know, how do you compare personnel-wise to the other CADs?
I can put that together in a formal document for y'all to see.
Thanks.
I have,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Ms. Cartwright.
Yeah, I apologize. Thank you, Mr. Aldis. Mario, you may know this. Well, I know you know this. One of the legislative directives that is likely to pass requires more attention to exemption applications. And, mm-hmm. and what category are we allocating another person for that, for example?
Yes, we are allocating additional staff in our customer service department. That's our department that handles our exemptions. And they do the processing of the exemptions. So customer service, in addition to answering taxpayer phone calls, they also process all of the exemptions that we've got. So we're adding three additional staff. And what Debbie's talking about is there's some legislation that would require us to process all applications in a quicker time frame. We would have 30 days to review an application and make a determination of whether or not we needed additional information to process the application. And then once we have all of the information we need on an application, we would have 90 days in order to actually complete processing and make a determination on those exemptions. So yes, we are adding additional staff in the customer service department to help us to deal with the additional requirements and the constraints that we have. Again, had more time, if we were able to create more time, we would be able to do it with the staff that we've got. But the fact that our time is limited means I've got to add resources to get that workload done and that volume done. But yes, we're addressing that. The other thing that would be required as part of the legislation that's pending is there's a requirement that there is a mandatory informals that we would have to have. Now, we've always conducted informals. We've tried to automate that and do as many electronically as possible. But we would have to do more informals, and the time frame on the informals would be slightly different potentially. And it could also mean that there might be a possibility that we would have to allow for rescheduling of informals. In order to deal with that workload, again, we would either have to create a duplication of my workforce during the formal period if we were going to do them concurrent with the formal, or we'll need to create additional resources to do it prior to starting the formal hearings. But we would not be able to do all of that concurrently at the same time, particularly as our protest volume continues to increase. And that just makes it more difficult and more of a strain on the staff. The other issue that I have with our appraisers is we've got a lot of churn and a lot of turnover, and we don't have the senior experienced appraisal staff that we used to have several years ago. A lot of the people are fairly new. It takes 5 years for somebody to get trained up and licensed to be an appraiser. We've got a lot of new people, but again, because they're so new, they're not quite as efficient as somebody that had, 15, 20 years of experience under their belt. So it takes a couple more of them to do the same workload that we might've had done by some very, very senior experienced appraisers. So, age and the fact that we've lost people to attrition due to age and retirement means that we're needing a little bit more in terms of staffing levels just to keep up with the volume that we've got.
And Mario, real quickly, do we have any residential appraiser positions currently that are open, or have you filled, do you have a full complement of employees in that category?
We have some positions that are open. We've had three resignations just in the last 2 months.
Okay.
So we do have some open positions. We're working to fill those as quickly as we can. But as we'll talk about a little bit later, it's becoming more of a struggle being able to attract and retain qualified people in our positions. And that's something that will, I think, might be the next slide. Yeah, I'll let Leanna talk a little bit more about the next slide, but this goes directly to our recruitment and retention efforts.
I just wanted to make sure that we didn't have a lot of appraiser positions that are unfilled. I mean, I hate to add 11 new residential appraisal positions when we can't find them.
Yeah. And I think we can find them, but the most recent person that we put an offer out to turned us down. And it was just because the pay was not significant enough to warrant them moving to Austin and the Austin area, where the cost of living is so much higher than where they were coming from.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And that has really been what we've found across the board, more so in clerical positions, but we're seeing it even in appraisal and some of our management levels. The cost of living in Austin has just gotten so high that our starting salaries aren't competitive with other industries. So for instance, right now we're having to compete in clerical positions with the Amazon and the Teslas and those large scale for-profit companies that are moving to Austin and creating facilities. Amazon recently said they were going to pay $17 an hour with a $1,000 sign-on bonus. So our starting salaries for clerical positions are $2 less than that. And when you're in that group of clerical positions, that $2 an hour makes a huge difference on the food you can put on the table for your family. So I think it's really important to stress we've had a struggle to find qualified people. And then when we do find a qualified person, being competitive in the marketplace.
I mean, we are right now, we're competing also against McDonald's and other fast food industries where they're all raising their starting salaries and minimum wage. McDonald's and Chipotle both said that they were going to start out, you know, between $11 and $17 with a guarantee of $15 for their managers. And we're struggling. We're losing staff to those kind of industries as well. So the competition in the Austin area to get qualified people. And again, we want highly competent, very qualified people to do this job. It takes a lot to learn how to answer questions, process the exemptions. There's a lot of training that goes into it, and we need really competent people. But also, once we get them trained up, we want to keep them because, again, the time frame that it takes us to get them trained is so long, so expensive that you want to keep them once you've got them trained up. And so we want to make sure that we are as competitive as we can be to, again, recruit and retain staff members. And just
a question. Oops.
In the past year, we've lost 27 staff members. And we've only lost, I think, two have gone to work for tax agents within the same industry, but all the others that we've lost have left us to go to other sectors, other employment sectors. So we're not losing them within the industry, we're losing them outside of the industry. But 27 staff members, seven of those are our management positions. That's a lot in the past year. Again, we've got to replace those people. But again, we're replacing them with newer, greener people, and it just takes more of them to do the work that we need to get done.
I have a question.
Yeah, Bruce.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all feeling this, the city, the county, yeah. Everybody's feeling the salary pinch. When's the last time y'all have done a salary survey for public and private sector to get a sense of where y'all are and where you need to be?
We did an informal survey this year. We focused more on our lower end clerical salaries. We typically hire those through a temp agency and then move them to a permanent position. So we surveyed all of the temp agencies that we use. What are you seeing? And they gave us a good guideline. But we have not done a formal salary survey since 2016, I believe.
Mm. Well, maybe it's time that we look at that. And, we don't want to get the survey, the salaries too out of whack, but turnover is costly too. And We're experiencing that in the tax office that our turnover has been really high and it's costing us a lot. And we're having to train. And it's not healthy.
Yeah.
And another thing we're seeing is my age group, the millennials, we don't stay at jobs. I read an article that the typical amount of time that a millennial stays at a job is 2 years. So it's the constant turnover is going to be a bigger issue. And having a bench of people who are trained and know how to do the job is going to be critical.
Leanna, did you guys do any kind of exit surveys from the folks that decided to move on? And then is the benefits package at least more competitive than what you would typically see in the private sector? I mean, I know most governmental agencies have sort of defined benefits. There's pension, there's days off that, when you sort of factor those in, the compensation jumps up quite a bit. I don't know if Social Security, but are there other benefits that we can sort of tout to sort of make the jobs more attractive and for more stability or anything of that nature? Or was that factored into your compensation survey?
We do have a very robust benefit package. We have our pension plan. We have an additional 401A, a 457B. What we found in specifically clerical and our residential and BPP appraisal group is the pay at that position, you don't care so much about benefits because you're trying to put food on your table and feed your family. And so we hype it up and tell them all the great things that we do in addition to our pay, but a lot of them, it's not that important to them.
And we do have a lot of time that we allow for our staff to take for vacations and other items. Our issue, particularly with our appraisers, is that during the summer months when your kids are off school and you're most prone to want to take a vacation, we can't allow them to take a vacation because we're in the midst of our protest season. And we've got staff right now that haven't taken vacation days at all in more than 2 years because our protest season, not only does it consume the entire summer, but it has moved into taking up the entire fall as well. And so we've got protests going on in the fall at the same time that we're trying to get our discovery and our field work done. And we just have not been able to allow our staff to take vacation because we don't have a very deep bench to take up the slack of that work if somebody is not there and present. And so part of it is building a little bit of redundancy just so that we can create those spaces for our staff to take some time. And again, it's not healthy for our staff to have gone on like they have without being able to take real vacations. It's not mentally healthy for them, but it's just where we've been just because of the volume of protest and the length of our season. And so if we can get some additional appraisers, we can free up and allow people to take some of that time so that they can recuperate and recharge. The job that we do is incredibly stressful. And so in our exit interviews, one of the biggest reasons people tell us that they're leaving us is because of the stress and because of the lack of balance between their work life and their home life. We're requiring them to put in so much extra time and overtime. And then when they are here, it's incredibly stressful. And so job stress is the biggest issue that we've got with people exiting the appraisal district.
I can think of three off the top of my head. One as recent as last week, who that was their reason for leaving was the stress level.
Question about the benefit plan real quick. If somebody just stays for a short period of time, 2 years, do they still get something? How does that work?
On our 457 match and the 401A, they both have a graded vest schedule. So at 2 years, you would get 40% of the TCAD contribution. At 5 years, you're 100% vested, which is a good comparison to our pension plan where you have to be here 10 years to vest. So it kind of gives them a short-term savings goal.
Okay, thanks.
So this is just a highlight of some other major increases that we proposed in the 2022 budget. The subscriptions and data has a 26.5% increase, and we are proposing to create a reserve for data purchases. With our new contract, state contract for data, the full data set would cost us somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000 for our data set. And we'd probably need to purchase that every 2 to 3 years. So having a savings plan, which this reserve would create, allows some consistency in the budget that we give to the taxing entities. They don't see a huge spike in 1 year to purchase that data. And then our legal and attorney, we're increasing that 39.4%. And that is just consistent with the amount of money we've had to spend on litigation in the past few years.
Question there, and maybe Dustin can help answer this. How do we account for such an extraordinary increase in lawsuits?
I think Mari already hit the point. TCAD is very aggressive in a market value, close to market value. And so we also have a lot of serial filers It's become very profitable for them to file lawsuits against us, given the way the tax code is structured. So you see that as a tool for them to try to get more reductions on their property values. And so we see a lot of redundancy between people filing year to year. So it's something that's not going to really fluctuate, and it's here to stay because it's a profitable model for the other side.
Just lately, there've been more opportunities created to file lawsuits, and there's just a benefit in, particularly when you're talking about equal and uniform. Once you go through the protest process, if you were one of the first people in the door on a protest, people behind you got a better deal, so you can come in a litigation after the fact and make an equal and uniform argument and get additional reduction, particularly if you were one of the first people in the door on the protest process. So it's just the structure and the nature of litigation in Texas.
Yeah, it's an endless trickle-down effect. Absolutely.
Okay, as a follow-up to that, another question I could see aimed at us would be, how do we compare in terms of the increase in lawsuits to the other large CADs?
And that'd be a good question.
We have both a higher volume of protest as a percentage of our total roll, and a higher volume of litigation as a percentage.
Okay, we probably are going to need to have some sort of answer to that kind of question, I would say. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yep.
Another large increase we're proposing is the postage and freight. And this is really because postage rates continue to go up. But we also have some additional mailings that we have to do. Last year brought in the homestead eligibility mail out, which became a separate mail out, whereas we used to just combine it with our notice of appraised value. And then we also have our Senate Bill 2 postcard from the 2019 session that we'll have to continue to send out. We have a 400% increase in the telephone charges. It's about $170,000. And this is associated with the ARB telephone solution that we put in place due to the COVID pandemic. But we got really positive feedback on this, on the application. So we will be using it again in 2021. But we've heard great things about it, and the ease for someone who lives out of town to be able to just call in and still have a formal hearing where documents can be shown and some of those critical items. Aerial photography, we're proposing to add the change finder application for this year. And that's a service through our aerial imagery vendor where it looks at last year's aerial images and overlays this year's aerial images and then highlights any new improvements. So it helps our appraisers know where they need to focus their fieldwork efforts. And then our capital equipment budget will be $523,000 this year. The majority of the line item is for the proposed text message notification system that is in Senate Bill 63 this year, which we do anticipate passing. But that system alone, we're estimating it'll cost somewhere around $300,000. And then we've also got some other, a couple of routine items like our UPS battery replacement, AC repairs, a couple server license upgrades that need to be made, and then additional storage for our co-location office data center that we'll be moving to the power sourcer storage that y'all approved the purchase of a couple months ago for our overall storage at the building. So this is in conjunction with that. And then cosmetic upgrades so that we can prepare Cross Park to sell. And here's the ARB budget for 2022. Mr. King helped develop this budget. He provided us with his what he felt would be a good budget for the ARB. It is a 35.7% increase, $429,000. Some of the big changes were the per diems and hearing costs in particular, and our attorney costs, an increase of $15,000. And we have a line item that y'all can ask him questions about the ARB budget in the regular session.
Leanne, this is Debbie. I noted that he requested $20,000 for legal services, and you included $35,000. And you're just anticipating an increase. Is that correct?
No, his original request actually had $35,000, and I sent some questions back to him, and he revised his request, but I didn't get the legal services update. So it can actually go down $15,000.
Okay. All right. I just noticed that there was a discrepancy there. So I wondered what happened. Okay. Thank you.
And that was it. I will say on the on Senate Bill 63 and having to implement that new reminder of a formal hearing, what we anticipate that will happen, well, what will happen because of that is we will probably have a higher show rate, which will put more volume on the ARB in terms of the number of hearings. Right now we can, you know, we can guarantee, we know that we historically will have a 20% no-show rate of people that are scheduled but don't show up. But I think once we start sending out reminders, that show rate will go up and we'll have to deal with that additional volume as well because of the reminders. Again, this is an overall, what do we need? What would we need moving forward? We know that 23.5%, almost 24% is a big ask. I think we can come down from that if we implement it over a span of more than 1 year. It might be something that we can spread it out, but there are going to be, again, some substantial mandates from the legislature that we're going to require some additional staff just to be able to keep up with that. And then just to keep up with the ever-growing just traditional volume of work that we've got. So
I'd like to add, Maria and Mr. Valdez, that also the legislature is about to pass a bill that will create a limited binding arbitration concerning ARB procedural violations, so that additional $15,000 for attorney and court costs may be well needed if you see some volume of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leanna, on the capital, it's like $500,000 in the capital. Are those one time? I'm like presuming that they're one time. These are not the recurring expenses. I mean, I know usually the, you know, some things, these ongoing costs. I'm just wondering if most of these are just one time. I think only the battery and the AC, I think those are annual requirements, but everything else is just one time.
Yes, ma'am. And in our formal proposed budget, we'll have the breakdown of reoccurring versus one-time expenditures. But yes, just those two items are reoccurring.
Was there any thought about sort of allocating the one-time cost from the reserve so you're not necessarily increasing the operating budget? I mean, just the annualized budget, just doing sort of making an allocation from your reserves to satisfy these one-time costs? Was there any discussion with the board around that as an option?
That could definitely be an option for any of the IT items. We have a reserve for technology enhancements that we could use and a reserve for network infrastructure that we could use. So that could be an option.
I just think the 21% increase is probably just not, it's publicly, it's going to be tough to justify, right? In the midst of every other entity sort of in scarcity in terms of realizing sort of similar conditions, but living under scarce conditions. So to the extent that you can bring that request down by allocating some of the, you know, the good work that you've done historically or saved and to sort of mitigate those costs, I think would be a little bit more palatable.
I can add that in for the proposed budget that gets presented in June.
Going along with that line of thinking, so what do we have a time frame for the sale of the Cross Park building? And we will realize some gain on that. Would that be able to replenish our reserves? I'm not sure how that fits together. that it probably does?
No, the sale of Cross Park has to be dedicated to paying down the debt that we incurred on the new building.
Okay.
It's not anything that would go into our budget. It would just go to pay down the existing debt.
It would probably modify our payments, our debt obligations some. It won't be enough to really, probably not even a percentage point, but it would make our payments lower by paying that debt down.
I thought the debt was like a 10-year callable note, so we couldn't pay it off early if we wanted to for a period of time, right?
No, there's no prepayment penalty on it.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay, that's good.
Can y'all put together some sort of priority list of these items? You know, what really absolutely has to happen this year, or it's just going to be awful, versus things that could be put off a year or 2 years. What I'm getting at is maybe we can start building a multi-year plan to get where we need to go. I agree with Nicole, like that this is a sticker price on this is going to get noticed.
Yeah, no, we will, again, we realize that this was a big ask and that it's something that we may need to implement over time. We certainly can prioritize the positions, specifically the positions that are most necessary which ones we can delay the implementation of. You know, part of what we've got working against us is the effective date on a lot of the new legislation that's requiring new staff is September 1st of 2021. So I've got an effective date starting this year on some of these items. And so, but yes, we can, we may be able to, again, there's a lot of unfunded legislative mandates of things we have to do, but we absolutely can look at scaling back. We just wanted to present to you guys the full picture of what we need so that we can start planning for how we're gonna get there over time, both this year and next year. There's a lot of things that we need.
Well, I think that's good. We need to see the full universe of the needs. We do that with the commission, knowing that it's going to be a number of years to be able to get there. But it's good to see everything. And I guess those legislative mandates are going to be towards the top of the priority list.
Yeah, they have to be.
Yeah.
And the other thing that, you know, again, in terms of staffing and the reason why we need to make sure that we've got adequate staffing is just so that we can get to certification on time and get those values out to the entities appropriately. Because when we don't hit that benchmark, when we miss it and aren't accurate in those numbers, it is costly both to the taxing entities and to the taxpayers. And to do the best service possible to both the taxing entities and the taxpayers, we really need to get as much done under certification as we can. But again, that's another issue where time is limited, and the only way that we can do more without more time is by adding more resources.
Maria, question on that. As I understand it, we do have a computer system that actually does the appraisals. What manual operation requires an appraiser to actually do some work, some significant amount of work that would help the system out? I tend to think if it's a computer system, you just enter in the number, then it comes out with a result. But are we looking at all manual activities and trying to cut that down?
No, our CAMA system automates a lot of the actual number crunching that happens, but getting that data into the system so that it can crunch the numbers and then doing analysis after those numbers have been crunched to make sure that they're making sense is something that requires staff to look at. So we've got to have, you know, valuation staff that can actually competently look at the models, see if there is any changes that need to happen in our models or our algorithms, and then implement those changes after they've reviewed our data. And that's something that only a human can do. It's not something that we can do through the system. We've got to tell the system, we've got to give it correct input in order for it to give us valid and accurate output. And so a lot of what we've got to do, again, with staff, we've got a new source of data, but it's not as comprehensive as our previous source. So there's still a lot of validation and of research that our staff has to do for market data, to get good market data into the system. There's still a lot of physical work that our staff has to do in terms of getting out to the field and doing the inspections and looking at the new construction and looking at the remodels, and just, you know, just because we're required once every 3 years to go out and look at every property, going out and looking at properties and confirming that there hasn't been any changes. Those are things that are just, it requires a physical presence to do and not something that we can automate. Now, we've automated to make our appraisers as efficient as possible when they're out in the field by giving them field devices to automate that process. But it still requires somebody to go out there and look at the property to see what has changed or has not changed on the property on an annual basis.
And then, Mari,
with the protests.
And Mari, may I add, and you always got to remember, we have our automated systems doing their thing. Well, you have agents and the agencies having their automated systems, and then they file 140,000 protests. So then the appraisers have to go in and make tweaks, you know, because it's all about what the data says behind the system. And so they have to make tweaks according to those arguments being made by those agencies and their automated systems. So there's always going to be that need for that personnel there to look at the data behind the scene.
Yeah, I would reinforce what you're saying on that. It always requires people to actually tell you what those data mean in the end.
Have we looked at trying to get our number of protests down? I think a big part of our cost is handling all of these protests. And if we didn't have as many, it wouldn't cost as much. So are we doing everything we can to communicate the actual sale data? I mean, you just have to listen to news and we know values are going up, but somehow communicating that better to the public so that they're not inclined to protest when they know it's a fair and equitable value that we're giving to them.
Yeah, we did a market research several years ago and found that the number one reason people are protesting to the appraisal district is not necessarily because they don't agree that the value is accurate, but it's they're protesting their taxes and how much they're having to pay in taxes. And, you know, Austin, Travis County, we've got one of the highest tax burdens in the state on a per parcel basis. We are the highest. And so there's not a lot that the appraisal district can do because we don't set the budgets of the taxing units. We don't set the tax rates. We are just the front face, the first face that taxpayers get to come and talk to about their grievances with their property taxes overall. We implemented and we're leading edge on the new Truth in Taxation and the website to educate taxpayers more about you know, what's happening on the other side of the equation and giving them that information so that they would have an opportunity to participate in that side of the equation. So we have done as much as we can. We're open to any suggestions. If anybody can think of anything more that we could do to lower the number of protests. But we still had that high volume of protest in 2020 in a year in which we didn't reappraise. And so I think that's just the nature of protest in Travis County, is that we will always have a high volume of protests.
Well, and ultimately our 80% of our protests are filed by the agent community and it's a business for them. So that's, they make money by filing protests. I don't know that there's much more we can do to decrease protest in the current situation that we're in legislatively and all of that.
Well, I'd like to think, they are agents. And the agents have always requested more data. And I know we have some limiting abilities to share that data, but if they had all the data that we had and arrived at the same number, then they should realize it's a waste of time to protest something that you know is accurate. And so that's something I would look at as far as Mario's point about communicating with the public that the appraisal district is in charge of the taxes. It's the taxing entities. Could we do a commercial or a video online that clearly communicates that to people that if you want your taxes lowered, you have to go to city council, county commissioners, school board, not the appraisal district. And we all know that, but I don't think the general public really understands that. And then we don't really promote that too much from what I see.
Well, I would say that I'm sure that the public doesn't generally understand that, but this was a discussion that came up several years ago. And the response by TCAD, I think, has really been very, very good to get the kind of information and analysis and direction out on the website that if people cared to read it, they would understand. I think there's a limit on, Maria, you know, going to the newspaper and saying all of you need to run over to the county commissioner court immediately and protest your taxes. I don't think she can afford that kind of politics. Yeah. But I think for the most part, Anthony, on the website, there is a lot of information out there that lets people know where their taxes are actually set.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just thinking out loud about the website. That would be another suggestion. Can we link Zillow.com, Redfin.com for people to double check and say, hey, this is what they think your values are. And if they have that information, they're like, well, I guess it's not worth it. You know, that's another idea I have. You know, the more information we can provide, then the more informed decision the public can make.
Those sites are free for personal use, but for business use, there's some copyright issues that we would run into with linking directly to those sites. So no, we could not link directly to Redfin or Zillow and publish that information as if it were ours. Again, they're out there and they're in the public domain, but they do have restrictions in their terms of use that would prohibit the appraisal district from using that data in that fashion.
And this is a complex issue. When you think about it, I mean, this is a state that doesn't have an income tax and property taxes have sort of become that in lieu of the three-legged stool. So, I mean, it's really hard to communicate the complexities of the taxation system, the lack of diversification that has led to this. And honestly, people are told just to protest. I mean, every neighbor I know just says protest the values to try to push back on the huge increases in appraisal values. I mean, the one thing that we love about Austin, the attractability is the one, you know, you love your values go up, but you don't like to pay the property taxes. I mean, it's just, I don't see a way that the appraisal district can safely convince anyone that they have enough information to accept the fate of higher taxes, especially since, you know, the state is highly dependent on property taxes to fund so many important things, you know. So I think it's really about, you know, can we be more efficient in resolving some of these appraisal values? Can we sort of think about sort of the legislative implications in the next sessions about talking to legislators about the impact of these bills and changes, these unfunded mandates and the pressure it's putting on appraisal districts? And then just maybe having a multi-year plan around sort of trying to increase capacity to meet some of these needs. It's going to have to be sort of a multi-pronged strategy around this.
I agree. I think until there's a cost in protesting your property tax value or something like that, that there's just many, many citizens just feel like, well, why not just throw it out there? Why not give it a try? And as many have articulated, the protest companies are all too happy to remind them to do that. And I think the ship has sailed and the district has done a good job of educating, but I don't know that we can influence, you know, walking back from the current pattern of people just, you know, contesting their value every year.
Well said, Nicole.
And one key component to that, going back to what I had said about lawsuits, is about carryover from year to year. A lot of these agencies, they have a contract with the homeowner to file year over year. So it doesn't matter what next year's value is. If they're already signed up with that company is going to file a protest on their behalf regardless. And so since the bulk of our protests come from those agencies, there's no likelihood that any rhetoric we're going to put out there is going to reduce them filing a protest on behalf of those property owners they represent.
Well, I'll just say, I know it's a challenge. You're right. The bulk of our protest is from these taxing agents. And I think if we want to get it down, we probably have to work with them somehow. And whether we like them or not, they're here to stay. If somehow we can work with them and ask them what we can do to make the process more efficient, I think that will be beneficial for our cost. I do think this is a big ask, and I'm not sure how our taxing entities will look upon it, but I hate to say that there's no answer. We just got to deal with it. That can't be the answer. I think we need to look at all options of trying to be as efficient as possible. One question I did have from an earlier slide, do we have our cost per parcel information?
Yes, we can get you the cost per parcel for it. If my memory serves me correctly, we are in the low $40 per parcel is our cost. I can get you an exact number on that.
Well, I did look it up, and actually Baxter County has it in their 2020 annual report. And yes, we are $44 per appraisal, which is the second highest in Texas, only Harris County at $49 per appraisal, and everybody else is lower. So I understand why we would want to use the tax levy because our values are so high, but I don't think that's an accurate number. I think we know the number of parcels, we know our budget, we divide the number, and that's what the county is paying for appraisals. And so we are the second highest. So if you look at that, and if we go with this budget, I just plugged in the numbers, we would be higher than Harris County with the 24% increase in our budget for next year. So if you could include that in the report, I would appreciate it. But I think that it's a more fair assessment of where our actual costs are.
Well, but you've also got to take into consideration the fact our protest volume is double the protest volume that Bexar County has to deal with. And they've got twice as many parcels as we do. And we still do significantly more protest. And that's a costly component for us, having to process and manage all of those protests. We also have significantly more litigation and arbitration that we have to deal with.
And I agree with that.
Our values are higher than Bexar.
No, I agree with that. And that's why we need to focus on lowering the protests somehow. Lowering, why are these taxing agents protesting all the time? I understand it's their business, but there's got to be a workable solution to get them to a level that is more on par with the rest of Texas.
Mr. Valdez, this is Debbie. I have a question.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I noted that, and I think it's something that may be an action item on the regular agenda, having to do with the increasing or changing the pay schedule for 2021. And it will cost $275,000, I believe. Is there a downside to moving that out to begin in September rather than in June? It would save some money, and I wondered if you would be able to accomplish what you need partly if that change were made.
Yeah, I think we could move it out to September to save some money. I think we are we're right now at a point where all hands are on deck dealing with protest, so it is going to be difficult for us to do the interviews and things that we need to do to fill positions. So September may be a reasonable time frame to look at that.
I think it's one way that we could save some money. I think it cuts it almost in half. And I think that's something that we should consider. If Leanna could tell us exactly what that number would be if it were moved out to September.
That's all that we had for the budget workshop. If you're ready, Mr. Valdez, we could move into our regular meeting. in our regular agenda.
Absolutely. Do we need to do a timestamp announcement and so forth, or are we good just to roll?
Yes. In? Yeah, you'll need to. We'll need to adjourn the work session and then start our regular session.
Okay. So at 12:27 on Tuesday, May 25th, 2021, the work session of the Travis Central Appraisal District Board of Directors stands adjourned.